From the National Humanities Center, this is Wayne Pond with Soundings, conversations featuring scholars and visitors at the National Humanities Center. In the course of 20th century philosophical inquiry and application, the name Martin Heidegger is important to both scholarly and popular audiences. For example, Heidegger has been called the founder of existential philosophy. But in addition to his contributions to philosophical discourse in our time, Heidegger also exerts an increasing influence upon contemporary political and cultural inquiry. This, according to one scholar in residence at the National Humanities Center. W.R. Newell is a professor of political science at the University of Nebraska. During his fellowship year at the National Humanities Center, W.R. Newell is writing a book entitled The Political and Social Thought of Martin Heidegger. Randy Newell, you are a scholar from the University of Nebraska. You're at the Humanities Center writing a book about Martin Heidegger. This is a man who died fairly recently, 1976. Who was Heidegger? Why is he important in 20th century philosophy, politics, social criticism?
Martin Heidegger, I think many would agree, was probably the single most influential and important German philosopher, perhaps the single most important and influential philosopher of the 20th century. Mm-hmm. I think this would be conceded even by those who find much to disagree with in his work. And Heidegger certainly has many who are very enthusiastic about him. I think the first thing one has to remember is that Heidegger is inheriting a very long and distinguished tradition of German academic philosophy, going back to Kant. Like his predecessors, Kant and Hegel, he held a very distinguished chair of philosophy. And in many ways, I think Heidegger was the direct inheritor of that great tradition of German idealism that is familiar to us through figures like Hegel, Marx, Feuerbach. And I think that Heidegger had a kind of double-edged relationship to this tradition. On the one hand, he thought that conditions of our time, the 20th century, no longer entitled us to view the progress of history with the kind of optimism that Hegel or Marx had, the belief that history had some kind of rational, beneficial outcome, mm-hmm. that the future was getting better and better. Heidegger, as a person of our time, someone who you could say came to maturity during the era between World War I and II, like many people of his era, was faced by the apparent lack of purpose that characterizes 20th century life, the rampant spread of technology, mm-hmm. of military destructiveness, of political fanaticism. Mm-hmm. And for thoughtful people, as well as I think for anybody who was aware of what was going on, it was simply no longer possible to share that grand 19th century feeling uh-huh. of onward and upward uh-huh. to better and better things.
What in the United States, for instance, is called manifest destiny, that sort of thing. Do I have that right?
In a sense, or you might say the kind of Victorian optimism about the future, mm-hmm. that we were progressing slowly but surely toward a better world right. for everybody, mm-hmm. more equality, more freedom, more prosperity, right. world peace. Uh-huh.
Tell me this, Randy Newell. It may be inappropriate to talk about Heidegger personally. We're discussing his ideas and where they came from. Does his own personal life bear directly upon his the philosophical results, which is to say, for example, was he a believer? Was he an optimist? Are questions like that irrelevant, really, to what we have of him and how we use Heidegger's thinking today?
No, I don't think they are irrelevant. Mm-hmm. Heidegger's philosophy is technically very daunting. And
tough to read, in other words.
Yeah, very tough to read. Uh-huh. And it's very difficult to sort of infer the background of historical and cultural events out of which it came. But I think there are a couple of important points one could mention. First of all, the fact that Heidegger came from a traditionally Catholic background, and as a boy and young man was steeped in Catholic studies. The parallel has often been drawn between his philosophy and earlier Christian thinkers like St. Augustine or a modern Christian thinker like Kierkegaard, and I think that the feeling of loneliness and alienation, of being adrift in the world that Heidegger so often evokes, has a very strong resonance with earlier strains of religious experience and thought. First of all, it's difficult to know the biographical circumstances because Heidegger is so close to us in time. Secondly, and more important, Heidegger, to an unusual degree, yes, is really a person who the main events of whose life are his works and thought. Now, there are important exceptions to that, the most important of which was his brief political activity in a part of 1933 and 1934 on behalf of the National Socialist regime in Germany. This is the single most controversial aspect of Heidegger scholarship. Responses to it generally, I think, tend to one of two extremes. One is to sort of deny that there's any connection between Heidegger's thought and what he did, to suggest that it was just a kind of personal momentary lapse. The other is to make a very kind of polemical argument, which has the danger of reducing Heidegger's total philosophy to this one episode. I think that there is definitely a connection between Heidegger's philosophy of the 20s and 30s and his very strong public commitment to the National Socialist regime.
Well, again, let's not spend too much time on Heidegger and the Nazis, but what did he say on their behalf? What was the, can you reduce it to a couple of sentences? What was going on there?
Well, I don't think I can reduce it to a couple of sentences, but I'll tell you very briefly what he did. In 1933, he accepted the position of rector of Freiburg University, one of Germany's finest schools. And he accepted that position when a former candidate had already been turned down as unsuitable to the regime. This meant that Heidegger accepted the rectorship knowing that it had a highly political significance, that he would be looked on as a kind of statesman for the Hitler regime. Indeed, in his rectoral address and in several other public pronouncements, he, you might say, used the terminology of his own philosophy to urge the German people, German intellectuals specifically, to commit themselves, as he put it, to the destiny of the state. Or, as he put it in another one of his utterances at this time, to accept the will of the Führer as the embodiment of the German destiny.
Did he believe this stuff? Why? Here we're under really thin ice, the questions of intention and result. I take it that this was part of his, what, philosophical agenda?
I think that he saw in what he called the German Revolution a real-life outcome of the kind of solution to the alienation, the drift, the despair of post-World War I Germany that he had already written about more speculatively in his works, yes.
Randy Newell, let's pause on that. Our topic is Martin Heidegger, the German social and cultural philosopher. Let's use this as a springboard to some of these large ideas, philosophical conceptions that we receive from Heidegger. You mentioned existentialism.
Okay. I think the best way of approaching this would be to just ask the very simple question, what at bottom characterizes our lives? Are our lives characterized by change, by impermanence, or are they characterized by permanence, by stability? Now, the traditional answer, you can say, of philosophy and religion was that behind the apparent conflicts and changeability of life, there was some kind of permanent unity, and that one lived a good life by trying to get in touch, as it were, with that unity, whether it be some notion of human nature, belief in an eternal God, whatever. This had been the traditional view. And I think you can say that in a way all of us would like this kind of permanence in our lives. We want to achieve something that will last. Mm-hmm. We want to have true love, not the appearance of love. We want to have real achievement, not spurious achievement. What Heidegger says really is to turn that on its head and say that the fact that our lives, in fact, most of the time seem full of change, conflict, variability, that's the truth about life altogether. Mm-hmm. And the point is not to try and evade that changeability, the fact that we can't rely on anything. The point is not to try and evade the fact that we can't rely on anything, but to face it courageously, to realize that at bottom we are finite beings, that the most significant fact in our lives is the fact that we're going to die. And that rather than trying to escape this, we ought to face it and ask ourselves, what is it really important that we do? Uh-huh. Heidegger would say that it's in fact our death that lends the choices we make in our lives their real significance.
How does all of this, Randy Newell, connect with the notion of authenticity in our conversation before our taping session here for Soundings? We talked about that. That's a very large, serious word. How does Heidegger approach it? What does it mean to lead an authentic life?
Heidegger's view is that most of the time we spend our lives in a kind of fog. We go to our jobs, we do our work, we try to get ahead in our careers, and we try to convince ourselves that this is important and significant. Mm-hmm. At the same time, Heidegger would say, all of us in our thoughtful moments have a kind of sneaking suspicion that what we're doing really isn't that important, that our agendas are being set by other people, that these things are not going to certainly outlive us. Mm-hmm. And Heidegger would, let me begin by saying that state of mind Heidegger calls anxiety. This anxiety, in fact, is a kind of intimation of our mortality. Now, whereas the traditional view had been that you should then look for something of immortal significance that would relieve you of that anxiety, Heidegger says, no, you ought to plumb that feeling of anxiousness to its depths. Mm-hmm. When you have the courage to face the impermanence of everything you do, mm-hmm. then you are living authentically.
All right, and what did Heidegger find when he dropped the stone into the well and plumbed the depths? Is he telling us that somehow there's something down there that we're all going to discover, or is it process rather than end?
Yes, exactly. It is more the way in which one lives rather than the particular goal uh-huh. at which one aims. In fact, Heidegger, and I think Sartre also echoed this point later on, the pursuit of any goal as somehow being permanently good in itself is precisely what dullens one's sense mm-hmm. of the stakes mm-hmm. and leads one into this illusory search for permanence.
What did Heidegger, for example, Randy Newell, what did he say about Jesus Christ? What did he say about Allah? Did he write about things like this? Did they enter into his philosophical speculations?
Yes, Heidegger was very interested in religion, and I might add to what I said before that his influence on 20th century Christian theology has also been a profound one. The work, for instance, of the Protestant theologian Paul Tillich mm-hmm. would be an example. Tillich's phrase, the courage to be, is a very Heideggerian one. Mm-hmm. Precisely the notion is that the authentic Christian does not search for permanent solutions, does not search for any kind of systematic theology that tells us how to live every day of our lives.
But let me stop you on that, Randy Newell. Our topic is Martin Heidegger. Would such a Christian nonetheless believe in, what will we call them, the sort of absolute kinds of elements in Christianity, the resurrection, the second coming, the divinity incarnate, that sort of thing?
I think the theologian influenced by Heidegger would say that all of these experiences are purified by looking at the the mystery of God's incursion into history, something that upsets all rational calculations about the way the world works.
Questions of faith, in other words.
That's right. You could say that here too, Heidegger harkens back to St. Augustine and the notion that one should turn away from the world, even from the religious world, for this intensely personal experience, this opening of oneself to one's own nothingness, so that one will be overpowered by the will of God. Although I should add that Heidegger has been criticized by theologians who are not so receptive to him for, in fact, robbing Christianity, or indeed any religion, of all of its positive content. And one might well ask that if God has been transformed into this mysterious force, whether one is therefore entitled to believe in any specific form of grace, any specific historical account of Jesus. I think that that is a possibly serious criticism one could make. And I don't think that religious faith is really at the core of Heidegger's own thinking.
What is?
I think this mysterious notion of what he means by being, which is to say the radical changeability of life. Certainly he esteems religion as one powerful manifestation of that mystery. But I don't know that a religious believer at bottom could take a great deal of comfort from Heidegger's thoughts about this.
The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. You're listening to a discussion about Martin Heidegger, the German philosopher who lived from 1889 till 1976. My guest is W.R. Newell, a professor of political science at the University of Nebraska. During a fellowship year at the National Humanities Center, W.R. Newell is writing a book entitled The Political and Social Thought of Martin Heidegger. According to W.R. Newell, Heidegger is important in 20th century philosophy because of his influence on almost all fields of humanistic inquiry, including the development of existentialism, the rise of the New Left and Marxism, contemporary interpretations of Christianity, and new methods of literary and cultural criticism. Heidegger is also noteworthy in modern philosophy in light of his views about the problem of global technology as one of the essential elements in 20th century life. Randy Newell, you're a scholar at the Humanities Center from the University of Nebraska. Your topic is the social and cultural philosophy of Martin Heidegger. Let's take this notion of mutability, transfer it from philosophical and religious speculations. Tell me about Heidegger and politics. How is he important to us today in that sense? The same sort of thing, all of this change and changefulness?
The thing that Heidegger did, which many of his own students, even some of those most enthusiastic about him, are very uncomfortable with, is that he took this experience of individual anxiety and uncertainty and transferred it to the collective of the people.
Put it into political terms, in other words.
Yes, he put it into political terms. He suggested that just as individuals find the meaning of life in their finitude or mortality, so do peoples and nations when confronted with the possibility of their destruction, in fact, rediscover the purity of their destiny and recommit themselves.
All right, now would all of this be in addition to or apart from the sorts of separate ideological concerns, such as democracy compared with national socialism, or communism compared with some sort of a monarchical system? How did Heidegger approach questions of political categories?
Yes, that's a very important question. Heidegger believed that modern politics were characterized by what he called the technological will to power. He is talking about the pervasiveness of machine technology throughout the world, but more important than that, he is talking about the frame of mind going back to the Enlightenment, really, and the development of modern mathematical physics that made machine technology possible. The development of a manipulatory, expropriating, dominating attitude toward man's natural environment, the absolute maximization of economic productivity, the total rational organization of the world. These are things which Heidegger thought had become the course of 20th century politics everywhere.
Uh-huh.
This meant that really distinctions like those between democracy and communism were for Heidegger superficial or irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
He looked at what in his time would still have been called Bolshevism or Soviet communism. He looked at American capitalism, and he pronounced them in a notorious phrase to be metaphysically the same.
Uh-huh.
What he meant by this was that whether you call it communist or democratic, liberal or totalitarian, it's the same basic process, the technological reorganization of the world.
Sounds like George Orwell. Who are the two competing forces there? Oceania and whatever the other one else is. They're basically the same sort of thing. Randy Newell, our topic is Martin Heidegger. You're a scholar at the Humanities Center from the University of Nebraska, writing about this German philosopher, man who died in 1976. We've talked about religion and philosophy and politics. Where else is he important in our 20th century culture?
I think that perhaps the best way of seeing this would be to see the way in which words that Heidegger either coined or gave their current significance to have entered our popular culture.
Hmm.
Words like commitment and authenticity. These are terms that, when Heidegger first discussed them, had a very, you might say, limited audience. Now I think they have almost become the way in which the man in the street talks about his life.
Yeah.
And there's something very odd about this. I think that people now use words like commitment or value in the same way that our grandparents would have spoken of good and bad,
uh-huh,
or righteous and wicked. To some extent, we mean the same things, I think, when we talk about these values being important to me. What we're really saying is, this is what I think is good or right.
This is what God would or would not approve of.
Yes, but obviously at the same time, we're not quite saying the same thing, because when we use a word like value or commitment, we really are admitting to ourselves that what we choose to believe in or do has no ultimate justification outside of our choosing it. And I think this is the simple but in a way far-reaching influence that Heideggerian philosophy has had in modern culture.
This is another way in which Heidegger's notion of individual anxiety has transferred itself, what, to the cultural plane, the very general social plane.
Yes. You might go a step further and say that Heidegger has very much put his finger on the feeling that many people have, that we no longer are able to rely on traditional sources of morality, on traditional religious or ethical systems, that we use words like commitment and authenticity because we hope that by feeling intensely about something or throwing all of our energy into doing a thing, that will produce a kind of validity for it that we admit we cannot derive solely from absolute reason or from some kind of unchanging moral system. Now, you could say that Heidegger was a very brilliant diagnostician of this change in modern culture and life. You could say that he contributed to the very feeling of aimlessness and drift that he was analyzing. There's a lot of room for disagreement about that.
Mm-hmm.
What interests me, what fascinates me about Heidegger, is that I think he poses the following question. Let's accept that man is a historical being, as Hegel and Marx had argued, that he has no permanent nature, that he creates himself in and through history. But we can no longer accept that historical process has any kind of benevolent outcome. What then do we do? This is what intrigued me about Heidegger. I think he offers the most profound rethinking of the idea that man is a historical being in light of the 20th century's all too horrible experience of the fact that our history appears to have no rational or sensible outcome. Mm-hmm. The century of the most devastating wars, the most disastrous despotisms, the most incredible carnage known in the history of man. How can we possibly go on believing in such a thing as historical progress? This is the question that Heidegger poses over and over again, mm-hmm. and that's what interests me in him.
How do you answer that question, Randy Newell? Are we, in our fundaments, not moving anywhere? You want to talk about something, as a question as large as that?
I think, in a way, the question is such a big one that a kind of patient thinking about it is maybe all that we can ask, and Heidegger mm-hmm. certainly does inspire that. I think if you look at the concerns that people currently have about the spread of technology, specifically in the forms of the arms race, for example, that here one has a concern that Heidegger would see as very characteristic of our era. The fact that we create these weapons, they are an extension of our power, they give us incredible, unprecedented power, and yet, precisely for that reason, we seem to have lost control of them. They seem to have taken on a life of their own. Now, Heidegger is very brilliant in diagnosing this kind of crisis. I think at the same time, one might also ask whether he does not exacerbate the feeling of our helplessness.
Because he's asking those questions.
Yes, because he's asking those questions, and because he himself is convinced that no traditional moral or ethical answer to those questions has any relevance for us any longer. Mm-hmm. I'm not so sure that that is the case, so I guess my final view of Heidegger is a kind of double-edged one. Mm-hmm. I admire him as a diagnoser of our modern ills. I sometimes wonder if the way in which he asks these questions doesn't contribute to the very sense of crisis and drift that he himself so powerfully analyzed.
Mm-hmm. The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. You've been listening to a discussion about the life and work of Martin Heidegger, the German philosopher who lived from 1889 till 1976. My guest was W.R. Newell, a professor of political science at the University of Nebraska. During a fellowship year at the National Humanities Center, W.R. Newell is at work on a forthcoming book about the political and social thought of Martin Heidegger. For a cassette copy of Soundings on Martin Heidegger, send $3 to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, 27709. Next week on Soundings, a conversation about social history and medieval English art and architecture. The Soundings panelists will be two scholars at the National Humanities Center, Roger Stalley of Trinity College in Dublin, Ireland, and Lawrence Hoey of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Until next week, this is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Support for Soundings comes from the National Endowment for the Humanities.
Listen to Soundings. This is Kim Nielsen at the National Humanities Center, inviting you to join Wayne Pond this week for a conversation about Martin Heidegger, the 20th century German philosopher. The Soundings panelist will be W.R. Newell, a professor of political science at the University of Nebraska. Heidegger has been called the founder of existentialism, but he also exerts an increasing influence upon modern conceptions of politics and cultural criticism. The Life and Work of Martin Heidegger, Some Answers and Insights, this week on Soundings from the National Humanities Center on this station.